Look at the big picture, Peach said. The nomination is in the bag. He's just wiped out his only opponent before a national audience, and he's finally convinced that his name will be on the ballot in November. But he's got this secret. He's got Ricky, and he's been thinking for weeks about what to do with Ricky. The boy's going to be released, he wants to have a rendezvous, etc. Blake feels the pressure on both fronts, from Ricky and from the realization that he might just be elected president. So he decides to stiff Ricky. He writes a note that has one chance in a billion of getting screwed up. Then the plane catches on fire. He makes a small mistake, but it turns into a monster. And he doesn't know it, Yarber added, yet. Beach's theory settled in. They absorbed it in the heavy stillness of their little room. The gravity of their discovery weighed down their words and thoughts. The hours passed, and it slowly sank in. For the next great question, they grappled with the baffling reality that someone was meddling with their mail. Who? And why would anyone want to? How had they intercepted the letters? The puzzle seemed hopeless. Again, they argued the scenario that the culprit was someone very close to Lake, perhaps an assistant with access who'd stumbled across the letters. And maybe he was trying to protect Lake from Ricky by commandeering the correspondence with the goal of somehow, someday, ending the relationship. But there were too many unknowns to build any evidence. They scratched their heads and bit their nails and finally admitted they would have to sleep on it. They couldn't plot the next move because the situation before them had more riddles than answers. They slept little, and they were red-eyed and unshaven when they reconvened just after 6 a.m., with black coffee steaming from styrofoam cups. They locked the door, pulled out the letters, placed them exactly where they'd been the night before, and began thinking.
"I think we should scope out the box in Chevy Chase," said Spicer. "It's easy, safe, usually quick. Trevor's been able to do it almost everywhere. If we know who's renting it, then a lot of questions will be answered."
"It's hard to believe a man like Aaron Lake would be renting a box so he could hide letters like these," Beach said. "It's not the same Aaron Lake," Yarber said. "When he rented the box and began writing to Ricky, he was just a simple congressman, one of 435. You never heard of him. Now things have changed dramatically."
"And that's exactly why he's trying to end the relationship," Spicer said. "Things are very different now. He has much more to lose."
The first step would be to get Trevor to investigate the post office box in Chevy Chase. The second step was not as clear. They were concerned that Lake, and they assumed that Lake was Al, and Al was Lake, might realize his screw-up with the letters. He had tens of millions of dollars, a fact they had certainly not overlooked, and he could easily use some of it to track down Ricky. Given the enormity of the stakes, Lake, if he did realize his mistake, would do almost anything to neutralize Ricky. So they debated whether to write him a note in which Ricky would beg Al not to slam the door like this. Ricky needed his friendship, nothing more, etc. The purpose would be to give the impression that everything was fine, nothing out of the ordinary. They hoped Lake would read it and scratch his head and wonder to himself just where exactly did that damn card to Carol get off to. Such a note was unwise, they decided, because someone else was also reading the letters. Until they knew who, they couldn't risk any more contact with Al. They finished their coffee and walked to the cafeteria. They ate alone, cereal and fruit and yogurt, healthy stuff, because they would now live again on the outside. They walked 4 smoke-free laps together at a leisurely pace, then returned to their chamber to finish the morning deep in thought. Poor Lake. He was scrambling from one state to the next with 50 people in tow, late for 3 engagements at once, a dozen aides whispering in both ears. He had no time to think for himself. And the brethren had all day, hours upon hours, to sit with their thoughts and their schemes. It was not an equal match.